This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And welcome back to the Ticket City Podcast. And if you are not drunk or high, you realize that this is not Jeff Ketchum. This is Anwar Richardson filling in for Jeff Ketchum. But we still got the very talented, actually, I would consider the most talented crew of sports writers that I know personally I've ever worked with. Jason Sukumel, Alex Dunlap, Dustin McComas, who's got a lot of great things to talk about. Start spreading the news, right, Dustin?
They played Sinatra at the end of last night's game at the Irwin Center, and people were pretty excited about Texas basketball for a change. So, yeah, there are some good things to talk about for a change.
For a change. So we'll get into that pretty early in the podcast, but let us start off with Alex. Alex was out there. Alex was at Pro Day. And Alex, I want to throw this at you because I've been thinking about this and I was interacting on the board and you saw we had a flood of activity on your Pro Day thread. And it seems to be like this huge divide. And I want to lean on your expertise here. I want to start with Lil Jordan Humphrey. There just seems to be a section of people that feels like, hey, he's made the right decision. He went pro. He's doing the right thing. There's others who feel like he should have come back. But Alex, I want to go lean on your expertise. You've seen LJ at the combine. You've seen LJ at Pro Day. Give me your just overall little Jordan Humphrey analysis, what you're seeing, your thought process in going pro. Just dive into LJ for me.
Well, I think, Anwar, I think that, look, what people on the boards who are saying he should have come back, I mean, let's just be honest about what that is. And what that is them wanting little Jordan Humphrey to come back because he was a good player for Texas last year that, you know, they want back on the football team, you know, right? I mean, I think that maybe 85% of those people worry about Lil Jordan's actual money in his pocket and the actual, his kind of life outlook moving forward, much less than they worry about the state of the Texas football program for the 2019 season, right? So I think that there's a lot of built-in expectation that you would expect people to say, like, you know, whenever he goes out and fails through a pre-draft process like he's done, a lot of people, you know, calling out and saying, well, I said all along he should have stayed. Well, yeah, but the reasons that you said all along he should have stayed were because you wanted him to come back to college. And just to me, when you look at that and you look at the Brew McCoys that are coming onto campus, you look at the Jake Smiths that are coming onto campus, you look at the fact that Colin Johnson is still here on the roster, you have wide receivers like Alvante Woodard. How the hell are you going to get that guy on the football field? Joshua Moore, how are you going to get that guy on the football field? Jordan Pouncey, it's about time that he starts getting some reps. Guys coming up like Malcolm Epps, all the rest of them, man. Little Jordan Humphrey could have looked at that and said, look, this is a deep draft class at the wide receiver position, but it's one where there's there's really no players at the top that have a lot of pop and sizzle to their names. As it is right now, guys, we don't even know that there's a wide receiver that's a lock to go in the first round. So, you know, I imagine that the feedback that he got from his agent, Jimmy Gold, through the process was that, look, or the guy who would become his eventual agent, he certainly had multiple suitors, none of which thought he would run this slow. I'm probably burying the lead. He did not improve on his combine 40 time yesterday. He ran between by my hand times, which I'm pretty confident in, between a 4.75 and a 4.8. Nobody was expecting that, and I certainly wasn't expecting that. So, look, whenever you run that slow, it's gonna completely tank your draft stock. And now people are looking back with this hindsight bias, saying, "Look, he should have come back. He would have helped his draft stock." And I'm just like, do you really think that somebody gets back to 1 year of college football and just comes out of that thing so much faster? I mean, at some point you got to say a guy is what he is, and Lil Jordan Humphrey was not going to get training from Yancey McKnight and from Tom Herman and from Drew Maringer about how to get his feet in those goddamn blocks and how to manufacture his best 40-yard dash time, because that in itself is its own skill. That's not a football skill. That is a track skill. That is a combine testing skill. It's why these agents send these guys to the Exoses of the world, the Michael Johnson performers, the MJPs of the world, all the different combine training centers. The whole cottage industry has been created around is to manufacture these good times for these players. So what his agent should have done is he should have, once he realized that this was going to be a very, very bad score, a score that's below the as far as an overall speed score, it's really even worse than his 40 time, because little Jordan Humphrey got down to 208, right? He dropped 15 pounds to be able to run faster, which hurts his speed score, because he was running that slow. It's such a decreased body mass index. And so when his agent realized it, even when we slim him down, even when he probably saw the 40s at first, it's like, damn, man, we got to have this guy lose some weight. When he lost some weight and his 40 times weren't coming in any better, he should have faked an ankle injury or a shoulder or something, like a minor one. Right. I mean, that's what I would have said if I were the agent. Just say, look, it's a minor ankle injury. I know it didn't show up in any of the medicals, but look, I'm not able to run at full speed right now. Hopefully I'll be able to do it for pro day. Then you get to pro day, you're like, damn, guys, like, I just still be bothering me just a little bit. Like,
that's genius, Alex.
And then you just get on with your top 30 visits, right? And then that's that. You depend on the tape. The tape did not show little Jordan Humphrey looking as bad as he did look at the combine, not only in the testing, but also just on the on-field drills, where I talked to you guys about that. That was him not being able to get under those post-corner fades that were being thrown to him by unfamiliar quarterbacks. The Drew Locks, the Will Greers of the world, they're used to throwing to these fast guys, and, you know, Lil Jordan just couldn't get under them, and it was completely obvious. Yesterday at the Texas Pro Day, where Shane Buechele was playing quarterback, a guy who knows Lil Jordan Humphrey and has some chemistry with him, he elects to do everything but the thing that could have made him look better, which was going through the wide receiver drills.
That threw you off. I saw some of your messages. That threw you off, didn't it?
Well, yeah, because it's the one thing. It's like, all right, I'm back in the friendly confines of this shitty bubble that we have to practice in. I have Shane Buechele throwing me the football, a quarterback who knows me, who knows my possible deficiencies, who I have actual chemistry with. I should be running routes here and showing that I'm a better route runner than I was able to show off at the combine. And look, I'm not talking out of school here. I've watched every wide receiver run every single route in Lucas Oil inside the NFL combine, inside Lucas Oil, not on a television monitor outside, but inside Lucas Oil, and have graded every rep for the last eight years. Lil Jordan Humphrey his on-field performance was bad. Scouts thought it was bad. He could have at least had a good on-field performance. What he chose to do was try to improve on a horrible 40 time that's below the threshold that a lot of teams are going to – there's some teams that are going to take Lil Jordan Humphrey off their board. They're going to say, we don't deal in 4.75 wide receivers. And, of course, every other board is going to come out and say, but Anquan Boldin ran a 4.7-something. Anquan Boldin.
Jerry Rice had a 4.71.
All right. Well, hey, it was not a 4.75 to 4.8 like Lil Jordan Humphrey was, and also point me to any more of those guys besides Anquan Boldin and Jerry Rice. I mean, people try to point to Jarvis Landry, and I say, well, at least he ran in the 4.6s, and that was an electronic time. We're talking Lil Jordan Humphrey was supposed to come back to the UT Pro Day and at least on the hand time be able to improve on this. Everybody gets a little home cooking at home because their hand time is not laser time. So, I mean, where I am with him right now, look, I think he was a great player for the University of Texas. I have nothing, you know, nothing but positive things to say about what he was able to do on the football field. But to those say that coming back would have helped him so immensely, because of course he was going to go for 100 receptions, and of course he was going to go for 1,400 yards and 16 touchdowns, even with Colin Johnson still here and all these other wide receivers coming up. And maybe if he did that, even if he didn't get any faster, he would have more production to point back on. I would say, look, that could maybe be the case, right? But he was never going to get faster. And the fact of the matter is, the threshold that he needed to get under to keep him out of trouble from going undrafted and coming in and facing an uphill battle, which at this point is a possibility, was right there at 4.7, those low 4.7s. After that, it's like the New Orleans Saints, you cannot take a cornerback that runs under a 4.6. It's just they won't do it, can't do it, can't win with them, can't do it, like Mike Singletary would say, right? Like, and there's a lot of teams that are just going to say that about, you know, these wide receivers that don't meet these minimum thresholds. So as far as Lil Jordan, a rough draft process for him thus far, one that I don't really understand. And to be quite honest, I think that his agent has sort of failed him in advising him or not getting him the proper training, advising him to run his 40 but not do his on-field drills with Shane Buechele. Just not, none of it makes too much sense to me, and maybe there's more to the story. Maybe we'll find more out as we get closer to draft time. But yeah, right now, I think that Jordan Humphrey's in serious danger of not getting drafted. If I had to bet on it, I wouldn't bet on him not getting drafted. But people on the board were asking if that's a possibility yesterday. And I said, are you kidding me? Of course it's a possibility.
So here's the thing, Alex. The one thing that I know as a guy who's covered the NFL, and one thing that you know as a guy who scouts and evaluates and also covers the NFL, is the one thing that at the end of the day, everyone goes back to is the film, right? They always go back to the tape. Joe Hayden ran a slow 40 time, you know, at the combine. He proved that on his pro day. But at the end of the day, they looked at his film and they said, he's a guy that's worth drafting. You have seen every snap of little Jordan Humphrey. You have graded him for the past few years. When you look at the film, do you see a guy that has NFL talent that is draftable, or is there not enough body of work there for you to say, hey, he's worth a fifth round, sixth round, seventh round pick?
I thought that little Jordan Humphrey was going to be a lot, test a lot more athletically than he tested. And so, you know, that's a surprise, and that's a dichotomy that NFL teams are going to have to work out. Where all I'm saying is that on the one side of the dichotomy that's on the numbers side, which, Anwar, you point out very correctly, the NFL is still a very old man, stodgy, anti anything except the way that we've always done it with scouting these players. We found these good players through our internal scouting processes. Like, you know, we don't care as much about these analytics and all the rest, but there are some teams that aren't going to rely as heavily on this, you know, as far as just really knocking him down. But what these teams do have on that part of the dichotomy outside of the actual film, which I agree, if I were an NFL GM would be the most important. I agree with the NFL's mentality that the film is the most important. And I agree with your assertion that that's what teams go back to. Even with that said, even the oldest and stodgiest of these teams, at some point, a tiny bit of analytics has crept in just enough to say, look, if a guy runs over a 4.75, right, at the wide receiver position, if a guy gets less than 20 bench reps at the offensive line position, if a guy gets, if his three cone is here as a, you know, over 7 seconds as a defensive back or something, like I don't even know there, but those thresholds do exist. And little Jordan Humphrey, by the fact that he has run a 40 time, that is most definitely below the threshold for the teams that do indeed have those thresholds. He's putting himself in danger of being off of at least a few teams' boards, right? Just being off
the
board.
Sure, of course.
And so I think that that's what makes his likelihood of possibly slipping through the cracks in this draft something that needs to be considered. I'm not saying he's going to go undrafted, but I am saying that, you know, it's very rare that a 40 time can, you know, hurt somebody like that. But when it's literally, you know, three tenths of a second slower than anybody had thought, you know, it's like, we're talking a 4.8, man. Like we all,
it was the slowest. It was the slowest time of any receiver at the combine, wasn't it?
There were offensive linemen who ran faster. Andrew Beck yesterday ran a high time team at 4.59. Maybe Herman's been right about that guy all along.
We're going to get to that, too, in a second. All right, so hold that for Alex. Go take care of your kid. I'm going to come back to you within the next couple of minutes, right? Jason, Dustin, you guys have been observing this. Jason, you obviously covered little Jordan in recruiting. What's been your assessment of this whole pre-draft process? And then maybe Jason go first, and then Dustin chime in.
I think Alex summed it up well. From my perspective, you know, I saw on the board yesterday people saying, oh, he should have come back. And like Alex said, hey, you know, it's funny. I literally had this conversation with my daughter a few days ago who runs track. I was like, you're either fast or you're not fast. I mean, you know, if you're running the mile, yeah, you can build up your stamina and stuff like that. When you're talking, you know, the 100 or certainly the 40 in this case, I was like, you're either fast or you're not fast. You know, there's only so much you can do to get better. I mean, a little Jordan, is what he is. And if you, you know, if people remember when he was being recruited out of South Lake Carroll, he was kind of a player without a position almost. And this is a guy who played quarterback some. People thought he could be a running back, receiver. Maybe he'd play, you know, linebacker on defense. Nobody really knew what he was. He kind of settled into the receiver position once he got to Texas, of course. But, you know, he wasn't – I won't say I'm not surprised by his times. I am surprised by his times in a negative way. I mean, I thought he'd run better than he did. But, he was never going to be a guy, even on his best day, no matter how much training he did, he was never going to be a 4-5 type guy. I mean, would I have expected mid 4-6s or something like that? Yeah, that would have been more realistic. But, and you said it too, Omar, I've said this for a decade or better. Sometimes I get it, man. Measurables are an important part of it. And, you know, hand size and all this shit that so many people in NFL scouts, I know Alex loves that stuff too. But to me, sometimes it just comes down to just watch the tape. Some guys are just good football players, and it's as simple as that. I've seen undersized linebackers who supposedly are slow, and all they do is just make play after play after play. LJ isn't prototypical. He's not your prototypical wide receiver, no, but he's a mismatch. You can put him on the outside. You can work him in a slot. You can do some wildcat things with him. He's a mismatch in some areas. He's a high-effort guy. We saw that countless times last year where he's moving the pile for first downs. I mean, you know, we're talking 10, 15 yards downfield after contact. He certainly didn't help his stock. I mean, and that'd be ridiculous. I mean, he probably hurt his stock with the combine and with yesterday. But I hope some NFL people still look at it and say, like you said, Omar, okay, yeah, that wasn't great. But listen, man, the guy just is pound for pound, just a damn good football player who's going to give maximum effort. I'd be surprised if he didn't get drafted. I mean, Alex certainly knows better than I do, and Anwar, you follow that stuff closer than I do. But just based on his production, his effort, I've got to think somebody certainly takes a chance on him. And I think he still can be a productive player in the NFL in the right system. And anybody saying he should have come back, like Alex said, I get it. Hey, yeah, they want him to come back because that makes the Texas football team better in 2019. Yeah, that would have been great for Texas if he'd come back. But, you know, he could have hired a speed trainer and maybe shaved, you know, 0.5 or 0.05 seconds off of his time, you know, maybe gotten minimally quicker in the 40. But he is what he is. He was never going to be a speed guy. That was known even when he was in high school. He was just an athlete who kind of was – could beat people with his versatility, with his size, even in high school. Like I said, when he's a very good high school player for South Lake Carroll. So, you know, I don't fault him for coming out. Sure, would have loved for his sake to love to have seen him run faster, but I don't think anything he did would have changed that. You're either fast or you're not, and LJ Humphrey is what LJ Humphrey is. And, you know, I hope people can look past the 40 times and give him a shot, because I still think he has a chance to be a good player at the next level.
Dustin, you're going to be the closer on the LJ conversation, and we'll go back to Alex to get more of his pro day thoughts. Could a second season of productivity, another 1,000 yards, maybe 12 touchdowns, do you think that could have made any difference at all? Do you think he could have gone down from a 4.75 to a 4.69, and maybe we're having a total conversation? Or at the end of the day, it just is what it is, and you're okay with it. You co-sign on the whole decision.
I think the speed is what it is. I don't know if him coming back for another year would have dramatically increased his speed or his testing times and all these things. I do think, though, with LJ, they're in a situation now from the NFL perspective to where they've seen these 40 times. And, you know, as you said, what do they go to? They go to the film. And I think that if he would have had two full seasons of really, really good tape, I think it's easier to look past the 40 time, because you're like, okay, this guy's got 2 years of really high level productivity. So somewhere on the football field, this athleticism, all of these things are transferring despite this 40 times. So I think from that perspective, it might have been a little bit easier for some NFL teams to look at the 40 time and say, you know what, I've got this 40 time, but I've got two full seasons of tape where this guy has been one of the best receivers in the Big 12, one of the best receivers in the country, lines up in the backfield, lines up in the slot, lines up outside, all these things. So I think from that perspective, he could have helped himself out. And I think that that could have allowed NFL teams to swallow that 40 time a little bit more. But as it relates to the speed, he's as you guys have said, he wasn't going to come back and start running a 4.5 all of a sudden. At this point in your development, you kind of are what you are as a speed guy. I do think NFL teams will start to really dig and see why he ran that 40 time. Is this a guy that put in all the work that he could have in terms of speed training and those things? Or is this a guy that didn't quite do all he could to really try to improve that 40 time? I think that'll be a question to look into. This is a guy that, you know, I believe was suspended at one point last year. So they'll kind of look into that as well and see.
Twice.
Yes. And see if there are some work ethic issues that maybe, you know what, this guy went to the combine and did this and we heard that he didn't do any speech. I'm just speaking hypothetically because these are things that scouts will look into when they see these 40 times. Because normally when you see a guy go to the combine, you see him go to a pro day and he's usually faster. You know, there's usually some sort of increase, whether it's just because of the hand times, whether it's just because of the friendly confines, whatever it is. So I think that NFL teams will start to dig and see why the 40 time is what it is, because they're seeing the film. And while he wasn't going to get faster coming back to Texas, I do think, you know, it's easier to say this in hindsight now that we have the 40 times. But I do think two full seasons of productivity at a very, very high level would have made it a little bit easier for NFL people to swallow the 40 time and put more trust in the film because they've got 20 plus games of it as opposed to what, 10 or 11, 12 games last year.
All right. So, Alex, let's shift back to you. Now, you guys remember last year, Ketch and I getting into it about the tight end position.
And I knew this was coming after I saw those 40 times.
And I nearly hung up because Ketch was showing his ass as usual. And am I vindicated at all, Alex? Because Andrew Beck seemingly has become a guy who was just a jag to a draftable guy. You don't have to do a lot on Beck, but at least start off with Beck and then give us a rundown of everybody else. But I do feel vindicated. I will say that.
I mean, I had him at 4.59. There were some people around me who had him even faster than that, but I trust my times more than I trust anybody on the Texas media beat just because I've been to hundreds of these pro days. I've timed thousands of these guys. And I'll say this, man, like, would you have expected a 4.59? No. I mean, you know, here's the other thing. He looks good out there catching the football. We know he's a great blocker. I just get to thinking, like, if Jeff Swain got drafted, you know, it wasn't like he even had an impressive pro day or like if Jeff Swain got drafted, I could certainly see it for Andrew Beck. It's almost starting to feel like Herman was right. That, you know, it's like Herman started out his press conference, you know, even after Andrew Beck's not even on the team anymore, he starts off a press conference talking about Andrew Beck. Because he was talking about how he was snubbed from the combine. And I was thinking to myself, you know, it really wasn't that much of a snub. This is a big, deep tight end class, you know, sizzle at the top and some good depth. It wasn't like Andrew Beck was a huge performer in the statistics sheet. But, boy, at that pro day, man, he looked good catching the football, running around. I couldn't get times on the three cones because you guys know how all the scouts – stand out there all the way around that L, and it's just from where the media had to be. At least they gave us the sidelines this year, which was really awesome. But where the media had to be, man, we just couldn't get any times on the L's or on the short or the long shuttles. But his three cone looked really good. He was crisp. He'd been working on it. He was able to drop his weight and get around that last cone and come around to finish to cut that thing off. At a super good angle. I mean, Andrew Beck looked like an athletic kid yesterday. One of the most impressive at the whole pro day, as far as I'm concerned, just apart from what I was expecting. So yeah, I think that he helped himself out a lot. And I mean, credit to Tom Herman too for always talking about that guy and knowing that, like, there was just stuff that they saw behind the scenes and what an athlete he was that just wasn't really necessarily apparent to us on a football field from a week to week basis. As far as and I mean, he probably doesn't deserve that much credit because he's with the kid every day and getting to see him. But I mean, maybe, you know, shame on me for not taking, you know, what a guy who's around the guy every day is saying.
Well, he says it, though. He said it. He said and believed it. He said it and believed it, though, with conviction repeatedly.
Right. And then I would just say also, like, another guy who they say that they love and who didn't necessarily show it on the football field, maybe a little bit more egregiously at times this year. Well, along with some really good play is P.J. Locke. And I'd be interested to hear y'all's take on P.J. Locke about whether he could find his way to an NFL roster. Yesterday, you know, there was some one cockamamie dude was timing with his iPhone and tweeting out this stuff saying he ran a 4.39, which is just crazy. But I mean, I had him at a 4.51. I talked to his dad. It was and talked to PJ subsequently afterwards just to make sure I had it right. But 22 reps on the bench, 36 and a half inch vertical. I mean, putting all those things together for a guy his size, that's a pretty significant pro day for PJ Locke. I would say the two guys that helped themselves the most, certainly PJ Locke and Andrew Beck, just coming in with numbers in these various drills and looking in these various drills much more fluid and athletic than I would have really ever imagined. Now, we got to remember that, you know, they're not playing against actual football players. They're just playing against air. I've talked about it consistently that, you know, some guys like Chris Boyd are really good against air, but when you get a guy lined up across from him, that's when the trouble starts. And with PJ Locke, there were some times this year where, yeah, he got burned in that nickel spot. He had trouble sometimes against these shifty slot wide receivers when they were given a two-way go against him. At times during the season, I thought that he'd become a little bit too muscle bound. I'll be interested to hear what you guys think about that. Maybe a little bit stiff, like he just got worked. He's such a workout warrior. He's so cut and ripped and big and stuff. I thought maybe he's kind of working his way out of being fluid enough to really be able to turn his hips and run with these guys or be able to, you know, hang with them on these option routes, as I mentioned, where they have a two-way go against him or they know where they're going, but he doesn't. And look, in drills yesterday, he's fluid. He flipped his hips well. He got back, tracked the football, went up and got it, ran fast, looked athletic, big, strong. I'm super interested to hear what you guys think about PJ Locke, whether he's like a practice squad guy, if you think that he could make an actual NFL team, maybe as a – it seems to me like that's the kind of guy, given his work ethic, given how hard he works, given the fact that he is that big and strong and has that speed, maybe he could, you know, be a contributor somewhere on special teams.
I was about to say, he could maybe be an Adrian Phillips type who's turned into a pretty damn good NFL player.
And for him, it's not just been special teams. For him, on defense, too.
Yeah, that's where he's made his mark, though, he's Pro Bowl special teams player. But maybe that's where P.J. Locke kind of, you know, cuts his teeth, so to speak, and then, you know, can work his way into a secondary somewhere. But I agree, it'd have to be a special teams player, I would think, so.
What do NFL people really like with guys like that? It's, you know, are you a good makeup guy? And what have we heard about PJ Locke like all the time is just how good of a dude he is. You know, that sort of thing can be the tiebreaker between guys that are able to crack a roster or maybe hang on for a practice squad for a long time, as opposed to those guys just kind of get kicked to the curb.
Well, first of all, Alex, before I give you my analysis, I want to know, did you walk away with one of those team lockdown T-shirts? I don't know if anyone saw this on Twitter, but apparently family members had team lockdown, and the O was like a padlock T-shirts that they were all wearing. I don't know how many families I've seen with those kind of T-shirts at a pro day, but clearly he had some support.
That could end up being some sort of really, really kind of, really sort of inside baseball, like sort of niche kind of collector's item to wear around like 15 years from now, and only only the most random of Orange Bloods and Texas Longhorn fans would know what the hell you're talking about wearing this lockdown shirt around.
They're finally catching up with recruits' parents who wear that kind of stuff all the time at like the opening and five-star challenge. You see these shirts they have made up for their
so
kids.
So we've advanced from when we were in high school where you'd wear back to state type of t-shirts to support, you know, your team and stuff. And that was all you ever had. You're telling me at the opening, families print out their own shirts.
Oh, like custom shirts, yeah, with their kids, you know, logos and nicknames and stuff like that. So, it's all good.
You got a track star, though. It's probably just a matter of time, Jason, before you got that, right?
Well,
Team Speed, Sukumel.
Yeah, and I don't think so. She would murder me if she saw me doing so. She doesn't like me showing up to her meets, much less cheering for her, much less certainly wearing a shirt. Recognizing that I'm her father. So
one last pro day thing for you, Alex, and we'll then switch to maybe some basketball, then hit some recruiting. Just give me your idea from the guys who were out there in the pro day. I was wondering if you can do this for me. Play this experiment game. Give me your draft grades, and if you can't give me a specific round, give me rounds. But give me the thoughts of, hey, you think Charles and Manyhue could get drafted in these rounds? You think LJ could be this? You think – give me all those guys. And if you just say, hey, DeJay's not going to get drafted and Gerard Hurd's not going to get drafted and all that, that's fine. But I'm curious of your analysis. I had to put you on the spot and say, give me draft grades. What do you got?
Well, DeJay's not going to get drafted.
How many pro days has he been to, by the way? Is this pro day three for him?
he comes every year just because he runs a 4.35, and that's impressive, right?
Is there a statute of limitations on pro days that one can attend?
I have no idea.
DeJay's last year was Charlie's year, correct?
DeJay is. I think that Coach Strong had to like invite like. Daja had to ask if he could come back, had to introduce himself to Coach Strong and ask if he could come back to those pro days.
Pete Herman, right? I mean, like, yeah. It's been –
I mean Strong. I forgot even when Daja was even here, man. Didn't Strong kick him off the team at some point?
But he let him back on. He let him back on, though. I'm just wondering how many of these can one person attend? I know I've seen guys do it 2 years, but this has to be his third or fourth year. I'm just fascinated by this. Go ahead, Alex. I'm sorry.
Like, if his first pro day was his freshman year, he has a case of senioritis by now. So Charles O'Manahue will go in the second round. Let's see. I'm trying to think of the name. I mean, Lil Jordan Humphrey will go sometime, I'd say, round five through undrafted. Chris Boyd, I would have said before all this that he could have worked his way up into day two consideration. He'll go and he'll be drafted, but he'll go in day three. Devontae Davis, and so what day three means is rounds four through seven. Devontae Davis probably will go day three, maybe stands. He'll go day three just because of his length, his athleticism, his size, and his speed. For the rest, I don't want to go through and say the guys that I think are definitely going to go undrafted because I don't think that that's really fair to them. I think that of all of them, Gary Johnson has the best chance of getting drafted out of all the rest. But I'd say that, Chris Nelson, he ran slow yesterday, didn't get a combine invite. Only ran in that 5.5-ish territory. I know his agent said he was disappointed in that. He was hoping to run somewhere more in the low 5.3s. He could be drafted. He's definitely on the radars. But he was not as good last year as Puna Ford was in his senior season. And as we all know, Puna Ford went undrafted, and Puna Ford had the benefit of an excellent Shrine Game and Senior Bowl week on his resume. To kind of offset the fact that he was not a combine participant. Also much, much longer arms and just a better all-around player and a more productive player on a per-snap basis from an efficiency standpoint on a team that actually had better defensive players on it, more productive defensive players, the Malik Jeffersons, the Deshaun Elliotts for a while, the Holton Hills, et cetera. So Chris Nelson, I could see him going late or I could see him going undrafted. For the rest of these guys, I feel like they're gonna do well to make NFL rosters or come into camp and try and make some things happen. But I think that the big splash that we're going to see in the NFL draft this year, I think early on day two, is going to be Charles Omenihu.
Thank you, Alex. I need you to get angry for me, Alex, as we're going to shift over to some basketball and get us into recruiting. So you can pump the brakes for a little bit, but I need you to get angry. I need you, because people are looking forward to that. But I know it's not angry, Dustin. Are you in the Empire State of Mind? Are you in New York concrete jungles where dreams are made of? There's nothing you can't do. Now you're in New York. Have you been singing that since last night, Dustin?
Well, shout out to the DJ at the Irwin Center who blended a mix going from Sinatra to Jay-Z, New York State of Mind, which I'm wondering, that dude probably woke up and went on Spotify and was like, yeah, I'm going to find a New York playlist and we're gonna have this thing ready to go and fired up once they win that basketball game. But I'm not only in a New York state of mind, I got home last night at like 12:15 or 12:30 or something like that. And I booked my flights. I'm going to New York City. So this is turned into
nice.
This has turned into like in a lot of ways, both for me personally from covering this team since like October, and then for this basketball team as well. This has a chance to be kind of a positive ending to what was a really disappointing season. If Texas can go up there and potentially play for an NIT championship, so. Yeah, I mean, who would have thought? You know, the last time Texas won three straight games was January 5th, a long time ago. Feels like years ago at this point. So they've now won three basketball games in a row. I think the most noteworthy thing is you can really see a group of guys in a program that's taking pride in an opportunity to kind of finish their season on a better note. I think that, you know, everybody was disappointed about not making the NCAA tournament, obviously. I mean, Shaka Smart brought it up again last night, how much of a gut punch that is. But, you know, as frustrating as this season's been for Texas and its fans and everything like that, this group could have just rolled over and played dead and been done and said, screw it, it's the NIT. You know, this season sucks. Let's just pack it in and look to next year. But I do give them some credit for beating a really good Xavier team. That Xavier team would have kicked the crap out of Colorado last night. Colorado just was not a good team. I don't know how they won. I don't know how they finished 500 in the Pac-12. The Pac-12 must have been a disaster. Everybody says it is. But I do give them some credit for saying, you know what, we've got a chance to win some basketball games. We got a chance to play for a championship, even though it's not the championship that we want to be in. And they won a couple of close games, and then they blew out Colorado last night. So, you know, positive vibes around the Texas program for the first time in a long time. It was, you know, we get to go in the locker room after games because it's a postseason tournament. And just to see like the smiles on faces like Dylan Osakowski, you know, Kerwin Roach, with the way his regular season ended, watching from the bench as he was suspended. I mean, he didn't even get a senior day. So last night was kind of his senior day moment when he's able to get off the court, get a, you know, standing ovation and all those things with his team way ahead. You just haven't seen many smiles around Texas basketball with the way the regular season ended and stuff like that. So it seems like these guys have kind of rediscovered the fun, enjoying playing basketball. And I'll be curious to see if they can keep this thing going in New York. And they shouldn't lack motivation because they're going to play TCU in the first game. And TCU is a team that went into the Irwin Center on Texas Senior Day and really kicked the crap out of them and probably knocked them out of the NCAA tournament. So if they're not motivated for that game, I don't know, you know, what else could get them motivated for a game.
So, Dustin, you touched on it, right? Three straight wins, which ties clearly a season high, which they've done before. They looked good. I mean, they looked good against Xavier. They had a 25-point lead at one point against Colorado. This is a team that hit 7 3-pointers last night. But here's my question for you, Dustin. This is what I cannot wrap my head around, and I'm hoping you could give me an answer. How are they able to do this without Jackson Hayes and Kerwin Roach coming off the bench? I'm trying to understand how this team is looking better without a guy who is clearly going to be a first-round pick and a former star. Like, how is this coming together, Dustin?
Yeah, it's a great question, because especially if you look at that game against Xavier, who had one of the, you know, the biggest front courts in college basketball, one of the biggest teams, period, a really good rebounding team, you're thinking, you know, this is going to be tough without Jaxson Hayes, you know, 6'11 out there with the 7'6 wingspan. I think first off, it's Jericho Sims. You know, he did this last year when Mohamed Bamba had his foot issues. When he understood that his team needed him and that he was going to play a lot of minutes, he really elevated his play. I mean, he had 10 rebounds last night. He had 11.7 rebounds against Xavier. He's just consistently competed at a much higher level. And yeah, there are some times when he'll miss some bunnies in the paint, and there might be some situations where he doesn't grab the ball off the rim as some other guys were able to do. But he's consistently competed at a high level ever since Jaxson's been out. And you see it in his energy, and it really shows up on defense because people forget this guy is a really, really good athlete in his own right as well. So I think that he's really stepped up in the front court, really on the glass as well. I mean, that Xavier game, how many times did he just keep a ball alive? You know, after Kerwin Roach went 1 of 2 of the line at overtime, there was Jericho Sims tipping the ball out to him. I mean, there were so many times that he's really grabbed something off the rim on the defensive end or on the offensive end, kept the ball alive. He's caught a lob, I think, in every game as a pick and roll guy. So he's really stepped up and elevated his play. As for the Roach thing, I think the biggest storyline about the NIT has been how good Courtney Ramey is, and not just how good Courtney Ramey is, but he looks like the future leader of the program. And heading into the season, I think we all expected Matt Coleman to take that jump, and he just hasn't quite done it yet. He's improved in some areas, but he just hasn't had that consistently strong season I think many expected, including people around the Texas program. But you look at Courtney Ramey, I mean, he just every single game, he's competitive, he's fiery, he's flying around, he's vocal, he's getting on guys. I mean, he just despises losing, and he's such a chip on the shoulder, I'm going to come at you kind of guy. And Texas doesn't have many of those guys. And it's not just his personality, too. It's just, he's really impacted the game as well. I think he had 11 points last night. I think he had 17 points against Xavier. You know, when South Dakota State came all the way back and tied that game, and everybody's thinking, oh, my God, here we go again. Texas started the game up 19-0. They're going to blow this somehow. After that timeout, who comes out right away and hits a three? Courtney Ramey. And who's the guy in the huddle saying, let's effing go to his teammates? It's Courtney Ramey. I mean, he's really grown up over the last couple months, but it's really starting to show in the NIT of late. And together, just he is a winner. And Texas needs more guys like that that just demand results from themselves and from their teammates as well. I think that that's one guy that Texas fans can be really excited about in the future because he has a lot of leadership attributes. And oh, by the way, he's a playmaker on both ends of the floor as well.
I know Shaka is usually kind of the same, you know, most of the time throughout the years when your interactions with him. Any happiness from him after the game? Any sense of relief? Were you able to pick up on any of his vibes or mannerisms or anything like that that gives us a clue that maybe he's just feeling like, okay, no one, maybe that these guys are to get off my back and I'm I could be okay for the next couple of games, or at least going into the off season.
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, you could tell. I think it was after the South Dakota State game. He had some comments that kind of was like, and you know, I know you guys in the media have to do this and people say that and all these things. You know, basically we can control, and we're doing all that we can. So you could tell that there was some fresh frustration for him. Like, yeah, I know. Like, it sucks not being in the NCAA tournament. It sucks being in this position. I don't know if it's relief, but it's almost like, It's not an I told you so type thing with this group, but I think that he's happy. He's seen a group right now that is playing like they all thought that they were capable of playing throughout the season. And, you know, he continuously brings up the frustration of, you know, not making the NCAA tournament. And I think in some ways this run makes it even more frustrating because here they are winning 3 basketball games and playing at a high level as a team. So I don't know if it's relief. But he's been very emotional during games on the sidelines. I mean, there's a great photo the AP took last night of Matt Coleman on the floor after taking a charge, and Coleman is screaming, and you can see Shaka Smart in the background in the middle of just a really, you know, energetic, like, fist pump, throwing his fist into the air. Like, he's been he's been as emotional and as into any games as he's been at any point this season. So I don't know if it's relief, but I think that there is some level of joy and satisfaction with, like, finally, like, these guys are playing at the consistent level that we thought that they would be able to play at. But there's also still that frustration that why didn't this happen throughout the season? He said at one point, and we asked him before the NIT began, if there were some moments in the regular season that he would look back to and say that these, you know, that still really piss him off. And he said, ask me at the end of the season, I'll give you a bunch. So he's mm-hmm. clearly been thinking about a lot of those missed opportunities during the regular season. But I think that this, you know, I think this whole program is starting to have fun again. They're starting to have some joy in basketball again because they're seeing a team that's finally starting to play at that consistent level that we saw earlier this season when they started 6-0 with the win over North Carolina. And, you know, they were 10-4 and 2-0 to start league play. They're starting to see that type of team again. It just so happens to be that it's not in the tournament they wanted to be in.
Last thing, Dustin, just real quick on this. If they do end up winning out and they do win this tournament, which, of course, they would, what, 5 straight games, does that overshadow not making the NCAA tournament, in your opinion? Catch through that poll out there. I just want to get your brief thoughts on, hey, if they went out, do you say, okay, you know what? This team didn't get where everyone wanted to. They didn't make the tournament or anything like that, but they have something positive to build on for next season. Or will it still, the conversation still be, yeah, but you didn't make the field?
I think that the answer to me is always, you know, when Ketch put out that poll, the answer to me is always the NCAA tournament. And if you look back at Shaka's quote last night, I mean, he basically said that's what you live for as a player and a coach, is to hear your name called for the NCAA tournament. So that's the viewpoint I think that they would take as well, that they would tell you that the NCAA tournament is always better than winning an NIT. But I do think that there's a little bit of, you know what, this program hasn't won anything in a really, really long time. You know, they've had an occasional NCAA tournament win. I think they've had just two since the 2010-2011 season, back when they got upset by Arizona in the second round of the NCAA tournament. I think that they've only won one NCAA tournament game after that. So this program hasn't won really much of anything in basketball for a long time. So I do think that there would be some acknowledgement of the season ending positively. Like, if they went on to win the NIT, be like, hey, you know, these guys won something. It's not the thing that we wanted them to win, but they won 5 straight games and they won something. And this program just needs some sort of winning something, because it just hasn't experienced that sort of success in a long, long time. But I do think ultimately the answer to your question is, the NCAA tournament is always better in the NIT. Even if it's a one-and-done NCAA tournament and winning the NIT, the answer is always the NCAA tournament. That is the goal every season, and that's really the bar for the Texas program, is to get into the NCAA tournament and try to make something happen.
Okay, Jason, don't go anywhere. I'm going to get to you in a second. Be patient there. I'm sure you've got Pornhub in the background, so you're probably all right. But
I'm actually banning people for political comments, so carry on.
Stay there. Dustin, before I let you go, I do have some baseball questions for you, because I'm a little confused right now, because you have a Texas baseball team that swept LSU. You have a Texas baseball team that won the series against Tech. But since then, they lost a series against TCU. Incarnate World happened. Are we just going to act like that didn't happen or not? Or we'll just ignore that. But, and I don't know if I'm even saying the school's name right. I'm sorry, I'm not a native Texan, so I apologize if I failed on it. How big is this series this weekend against Xavier in your point of view?
I think it's really big, because this is the first break in the weekend schedule that they've had in a long, long time. You look at the grind that they've played, you know, hosting LSU, going on the road, playing 4 games at Stanford, heck, even the double midweek game against Arkansas. Then you open up Big 12 play at Texas Tech, and then you're on the road at TCU. That's a lot of games against top 25 teams. Leading into that, this midweek game against Incarnate Ward, they had played 15 games against teams in the top 25 out of their 27 games. So it's been a grind. And now the schedule opens up a little bit, starting with Xavier this week, and a team that Texas should win that series. It's never easy to sweep anyone. That's just kind of the nature of baseball. But quite frankly, it's a series that Texas should sweep as well. But they should definitely win that series. And especially the way the TCU series ended, where they really let that series slip away. One game it was defense, one game it was pitching. It was just they weren't good in late innings in that game, and they really let a series win slip away. And then you go on to San Antonio and play, you know, a midweek game to where you're a favorite team. You should have won that game, and there just wasn't quite that same response that they've had in games this year. Midweek games can kind of create fluky results. I mean, that same midweek, Portland went to Oregon State and beat number 7 Oregon State. McNeese State beat LSU. There's, you know, Incarnate Word already went on the road and beat Texas A&M in a midweek game. Midweek games on their own kind of have these weird results just because of the nature of the pitching and all these things. But that's a game Texas should have won. And that's a game that they didn't quite respond like they've normally responded following a TCU series where I think they know they let one slip away. I would guess that David Pierce really laid into them pretty good after that series. So I do think that suddenly the Xavier series is bigger than I think we expected it to be originally on the schedule, because it's an opportunity that they need to get right. They need to get that confidence going. They need to excel in all three areas of the game, and they need to handle an inferior opponent. Then when they get back into Big 12 play, they have some momentum again. So, yeah, I do think this is a big opportunity for them this weekend to get right, to get some guys to have some confidence going and things like that. And, two, I think – one underrated thing that I think a lot of fans overlook when these guys get to this grind of the schedule, you have to have one off day a week. And sometimes when you're playing a double midweek game, and then you're going on the road to play a top 25 team, so you've got to travel, you got to bus up there, you don't have any practice time. It's basically just batting practice and infield before the games, and that's it. You know, these guys, you know, when class picks back up, they're going to class and things like that. So I don't think it's a coincidence that as the schedule opened up last year and got more on a normal schedule, you started to see Texas really improve, because they were able to get back to practicing. They were able to get guys in there, work on swings. They were able to get guys in the bullpen and work on some things in there. They were able to have some more defensive reps. So I think that I would be concerned if I'm a Texas fan, if Texas comes out this weekend and just does not play well against an opponent that they should really handle. This is an opportunity for them to get right, and really should be a series win.
Tell me what your concern level is with Ty Madden and that shoulder. You've mentioned a little bit about his velocity. Velocity, by the way, it's Incarnate Word, and I was saying world, so I totally apologize. But what's your concern level, you know, with him right now, Dustin?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I'm probably at a 5. Because this is a guy I saw in high school in the playoffs that was up to 96 miles an hour. I saw him his first fall scrimmage at Texas. He was up to 98. And this is a guy with big, big time velocity. And I know as he's gotten to the collegiate level, he's tried to, you know, command more and throw more strikes and maybe not be as max effort of a guy. But he's basically been 86 to 90 for a while now, and that to me is concerning. So whenever you deal with a situation where, you know, you have some sort of shoulder discomfort, but there's not really any pain, obviously, because they wouldn't have put him back out there Tuesday if he had any pain. They would have just continued to rest him. Perhaps that's a dead arm type thing. And with dead arm, I mean, I had it growing up at times. It's just really hard to predict. It's almost unexplainable to where nothing really hurts. Maybe there's a little just general soreness, but nothing really hurts, but your velocity just isn't there. So until his velocity picks back up, I do think that that's a concern, because sometimes shoulder issues are kind of hard to pin down. Maybe it's a situation where they just rest him a lot moving forward. Maybe they shut him down for a week, 2 weeks, something like that. I don't know. But we just haven't seen that big-time velocity that we saw of him earlier this season. I mean, I think he was up to 93, 94 in some of his outings earlier this season. That's the Madden I'm used to seeing. And until he gets back to that point, I think there is a little bit of concern.
Who do you expect in the pitch this weekend, Dustin? Give us just kind of a preview of this, you know, before you write it, give us a small preview of Texas Xavier.
Yeah, I think one of the more underrated storylines as it relates to starting pitching is that Blair Henley, after two really bad starts to begin the year, has been really, really good against some really, really good teams. So he's starting to meet that potential finally in being a consistent pitcher. He's going to be locked into that Saturday role. Bryce Elder, we know, has been really, really good as Texas Friday started. I mean, he took a shutout into the ninth inning at TCU. He was the Big 12 pitcher of the week for the second time. So he's locked into that Friday role. I'm kind of curious what they do with the Sunday role. Coy Cobb just hasn't been able to get deep into a game yet. And with Ty Madden dealing with his issues, that kind of eliminates a potential starter there. So I don't know if they're going to move that Sunday role. We'll talk to David Pierce later this afternoon. He usually gives us the rotation on Thursday ahead of the series. But this, you know, like I said, this is a series where Texas is the better team on paper. They're the more complete team on paper. They're going to see some arms that, you know, they're going to have a break from seeing a bunch of 95-plus arms with quality stuff for a change. So those hitters should welcome that change of pace. And be able to put up some numbers. So I'm not really expecting the rotation to change. Maybe that Sunday position. But Texas is a much better team on paper, and they should win this series.
Jason, are you done? Are you done banning people, Jason?
I finished it up. I cleaned up a thread. So
but yet amazing when we have polls, people say you're one of the favorite mods, and I just keep thinking, but he's the mod that bans the most. But well, yet.
So here's what's happened. There's a totally non-political thread, and one guy comes on and says, well, they're talking about Jesse Smollett or some shit, is that right?
Yes,
well, then someone said, yeah, he's a piece of shit. Someone else responds as not as big as a piece of shit as Trump. Trump's been a piece of shit for years. And another guy says, the whole Democratic Party is a piece of shit. So it's like, those are blatantly political comments. So I give him a 7-day ban. Inevitably, I'll get a message in about an hour from each one of them complaining, and I'll be accused of the one that I banned for the Trump candidate. I'll be accused of hating Republicans. The one that I banned for the
goalposts. Why don't you make it fair for both?
Well, yeah. Then the one that I banned for making the comment about the Democratic Party, I'll be accused of being a right wing nut and I'm not fair and da da da. You know, and I always tell these people, you know what? If you can find one shred of proof in close to 20 years I've been on this board of my political leanings, I will comp your subscription. Go for it. But I get accused of a little bit of everything. But, you know, just keep that shit off the board. It drives me crazy. Why is it so difficult?
Because it is inch mile. It's inch mile. It's just, hey, we're going to just keep doing it and then just hope overboard. What I love, though, is the people who get banned and then the people who curse you out after they get banned. Those are the people I love the most. So people say, screw you, F you, F you. But then they inevitably reach out to one of us and want to know, well, why did Jason ban us? And it's usually because, well, you got banned and then you cursed them out. And so you didn't really make things easier.
Well, listen, if you just say, hey, man, sorry, screwed up, lost my cool, won't happen again, boom, you're back on. If you F-bomb me up, and I mean, even then I don't permaban you. You have to go really extreme for me to permaban you. But
yeah, you would have to go like faking your own death type of thing, which happened last year. Jason, you dropped. It was really cool. I read obviously. I read your stuff every week, but your 3-2-1. I found it really funny. Like, you wrote a ton of stuff, and then at the end, your last one, you just kind of dropped the bomb and just like walked away from it. And because you're like, oh, I just think Prince Dorba is going to go to Texas. And then you just left the whole damn thread. Wait, can we back up for a little bit and start?
Hey, catch. I'm going to talk about that in the war room.
Well, you know what? The only thing I haven't done is interrupt you guys. So, but outside of that, that will be a full catch move. But yeah, you just dropped that. Give us what little you can without spoiling it all, because you dropped the bomb and you ran away.
Well, I always have to make one prediction. Believe it or not, sometimes the prediction part of that column is the most tricky one. I mean, it's like 200 words, but it's the most tricky one to come up with trying to predict something. But, you know, I'll just say it. I mean, I'll elaborate in the war room, of course. But I thought for the longest time, or I felt that Prince Dorba, the Highland Park defensive end linebacker kind of combo backer, if you will, I thought it was going to come down to Texas or Oklahoma. Well, at the Rivals camp in Dallas last weekend, he actually told another Rivals reporter, he told our Oklahoma guy, which is interesting. He dropped a top five on, I believe it was Friday night or Saturday night. It had Texas, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, LSU, and Arkansas. And that was, I can't remember if it was Friday or Saturday night. Well, on Sunday, he told our Oklahoma guy, man, Oklahoma's not even really recruiting him anymore. So I was like, okay, well, that makes me think that guy's for sure going to wind up at Texas. I think Arkansas is, you know, a sneaky team to watch there, maybe LSU. But I could see that one. I think, A, I think that one's going to happen for Texas. B, I'm still kind of poking around on some things. I could see that happening sooner than later. You know, Prince, when I talked to him on Sunday, didn't have any visits, like, locked in. But he does want to start taking them pretty soon. Don't be surprised if he surfaces in Austin this weekend. I'm still, like I said, poking around on that. But that's kind of the backstory there on, whereas I don't think Oklahoma is nearly the factor that I thought they were previously, which makes me think Texas is the team to beat there, probably by a pretty significant margin.
Are you expecting him to, you know, announce at some point, commit at some point? Like, what do you think? What's your timeline or guess at this point?
Well, he told me probably summer. Most every guy I've talked to lately is either summer or they're going to, you know, I'm going to take it all the way till signing day. You know, his plan is to take some visits this spring and commit in the summer. Listen, man, if he shows up in Austin this weekend or for an official visit, let's just say in the first weekend of May, when I think they're going to have some guys in, I mean, he may, we've seen it a million times before. He may fall in love with everything he's seen. He's seen it plenty of times before. He may just be, say, you know what? I'm just tired of, I don't need the suspense. I don't need the games. I'm going to do it. So his timeline has publicly, he's told me it's probably going to be this summer sometime, but those are always flexible and you can certainly see things move a little quicker than that.
Is he projecting to play the linebacker position? Because he's listed at 6'4", 215. So, yeah. You know, unless there's going to be a Charles and Menihu growth, does he start at a linebacker position and maybe eventually work his way to the DN? Like, what do you know what he's been told?
Well, it's a good question, and it's a big topic of conversation. I think Rivals has him listed as a defensive end. And, you know, I'm not sure he's 6'4", and I'll be interested. Rivals got official measurements last week, so I haven't seen what those have come out. Maybe he is, and maybe I just had a weird angle when I was talking to him, but I don't remember looking at him thinking, damn, he's really tall. You know, Charles Menihu was really long and really lean when Texas recruited him, but you always knew he was going to be a defensive end just from his height and his kind of skill set. Prince Dorba, you know, some schools were telling him defensive end. I think Texas has kind of told him, hey, you'll do a little bit of everything. You'll rush the passer. We'll drop you into coverage. I think he's more of a B backer for Texas in that he's pretty athletic coming off the edge. He moves well in space. You can still line him up on the at or near the line of scrimmage and have him get to the passer, but he can also do some things in space off the line of scrimmage. So right now I would say he's definitely undersized to play defensive end, a pure defensive end in what Texas is currently doing. I think he would need to be more of a linebacker, maybe a Joseph Osai type. And then you see where his body goes in the next 2 or 3 years.
You also wrote about, you know, the Brockermeyer boys, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And you they've been on campus and seemingly liked Herb Hand and at least the recruiting. One guy's got an offer, one guy doesn't. Give me your read on that one, Jason. Give me your read on what you're seeing, and you know, let's play pontificator on a podcast.
Yeah, nice pontificator. That's a 50-cent word there, by the way. But
I can't spell it, by the way. Say,
let me pull up dictionary.com as I'm talking here.
Siri.
But yes, Siri. No, well, you're talking about, of course, Tommy and James Brockermeyer, the twin boys from All Saints Episcopal High School. And their dad, of course, is Blake Brockermeyer, former Longhorn All-American. And I believe their dad played at Texas, too. Someone said I need to Siri that or Google that. But I believe our granddad, I think their granddad and father both, I know their father played. But, you know, Texas has offered Tommy, Texas has not offered James. Tommy's a pure tackle prospect who is going to be a five-star type talent. I mean, he could be the top player in the state for next year and or for the 2021 class, just a fantastic player. He'll have his, you know, pick of any school in the country. James has kind of been under the radar, mostly because he is undersized by most standards. He's about 240 pounds, about 6'4", 240. But just of late, last month or so, I mean, he's picked up some pretty impressive offers. He's got Iowa, Oklahoma offered him, Michigan, LSU just recently offered. Notre Dame did just recently offer Tommy Brockermeyer. Texas hasn't offered James Brockermeyer. Herb Hand told him, you know, they visited Texas the Friday before spring break. Both brothers and their father were in town. Herb Hand told James, hey, I want to come out to see you this spring, see you in person, then we'll make our decision on an offer. Now, if you don't offer James, does that mean you don't get Tommy? Not necessarily. In talking to both brothers, they told me, hey, you know, we'd like to play together, but we're not, you know, attached at the hip. If it's not good for one and it's good for the other, we'll go our separate ways. But come on, man, these are twin brothers. They're Texas legacies. It just makes sense. If Texas offers James Brockermeyer, it's, I mean, you hate to call anything a slam dunk, but it ultimately pretty much is a slam dunk. I think that Texas gets both of the Brockermeyer brothers. Now, the question is, if they don't offer James, then what happens? And if they don't offer him, what are Oklahoma and LSU and Iowa and Michigan seeing that Texas isn't? Now, you know, to be fair with James, you're projecting a little bit. He's 240 pounds. I mean, you're projecting on what his body's going to do, and can he be a center for you, and can he hold up to that? You know, last week he was matched up with a young man who's actually a freshman named Keithian Alexander, freshman in high school Terrell High School. And this guy was 340 pounds, freshman defensive tackle. And, I mean, he just kind of bullied James Brockermeyer, if I'm being honest, but didn't look good on film. But then you take into the fact that, okay, the dude had 100 pounds on him. What do you really expect from James Brockermeyer to hold up against somebody like that? But, you know, bottom line is, I know James Brockermeyer and Alex could watch his film and tell you better than I can, but he has the tools. He's technical. I talked to him and he said, you know, he loves the game. He's technical. He does have a nasty streak in him, and he's going to fight, man, even against the guy who's 100 pounds over him. Literally, he almost got in a fight with the guy at the camp. So he's got some scrappiness to him, but I think Herb Hands wants to see him in person. You know, you have to do some projection on how his body's going to develop over the next 2-3 years. But I think if Texas offers, and I do think there's a really good chance of that happening, I think those two could be your first commitments in the 2021 class for the Longhorns.
They got anybody coming in this weekend, Jason?
Well, the Keithian Alexander, the young man I mentioned, the defensive tackle, the 340-pounder, he's coming in. There is a defensive tackle out of Louisiana. He's a 2021, so he's a young kid. He's only a sophomore. He'll be in town this weekend, but a big time. No rankings out for those guys yet. They're so young, but he's got offers from Alabama and LSU and a bunch of them. So I would look for Texas to possibly jump in the mix there. Like I said, I've kind of heard some scuttlebutt that Prince Dorba might show up. That hasn't been ironed out yet, but that's a possibility. And they've got their scrimmage on Saturday. There's another linebacker who sent me a DM that he's coming in. Honestly, he's not really on my radar yet, but he's coming in. You know, I don't know if that's I'll pull up his name for the war room or something, but I don't know if he doesn't have any offers. He's not a high profile guy, but he is coming in. I mean, they'll have some guys. They have a scrimmage Saturday. You always have guys at that, you know, look for some local guys. I would not be surprised to see someone like certainly Hudson Card, some of those types at the scrimmage this weekend. So they'll have some guys on campus, but it's not going to be a major recruiting focus this weekend.
Tell me just two last things, Jason. Spring game is around the corner, you know, and I know Texas is working on their list. I want to know, you know, your feeling and your vibe as far as the visits for that spring game. Are they feeling confident from the folks that you're speaking to? I know that Xavion, you know, Alfred won't be there, but for the other guys that they're having lined up, what's your thoughts and impressions? And in a two-parter as relates to that, if a guy doesn't go to the spring game, like Xavion, for instance, does that necessarily mean that Texas is out of the hunt or you know, this is the guys attending the spring game? Is that kind of a good precursor that there's a good possibility that they'll land them or not? Just tell me what I should make of it.
Well, I think spring game attendance this year isn't as important as maybe traditionally it has been. It's interesting. This year, a lot of guys don't have plans, or they're, as of right now, they're like, I'm not sure what I'm doing. You know, Chad Lindbergh's a big one who has said he will definitely be there. The big offensive line target Texas is going after him. You'll have several others. There'll be, I think, a couple out-of-state guys there. But this year's different, man. You've got Texas A&M, Oklahoma, even a school like Alabama, where Xavier Alford's going. All their spring games are all on the same day. Normally, those schools try to stagger those a little bit, but this year, for whatever reason, they're all on the same day. You know, interestingly, I asked Zachary Evans' brother, I said, hey, do you know which spring game you're going to hit? And he goes, man, we hadn't really even figured it out yet. And I said, are you thinking you might come up to Austin? He goes, that's possible. We need to sit down and talk about it. I mean, most of the guys I've talked to this year are undecided. One guy, Prince Suyuman Milan, the defensive end out of Maynard, and I need to follow up with him because he's got a teammate that's coming. But he told me last week, he said, hey, I'm probably just going to stay home so I can watch all those games on television and kind of get a gauge of things off of watching them on television. So, you know, I don't expect this year's spring game list to be, you know, 5-6 years ago, man. I mean, it was the who's who in the state would show up at the Texas spring game. Maybe not quite as much this year. They'll still have some good players there. And, you know, we'll see. Maybe the Brockermeyer brothers show up. Maybe some of these DBs that they're recruiting show up. But the guys I've talked to, you know, maybe Prince Dorba shows up for that. The guys I've talked to, by and large, have said, hey, not really sure yet what they're going to do. And they're still trying to decide which one they're going to hit, if they hit any of them, because there are so many on the same day.
All right. We obviously went over a little bit over an hour, so why don't we just go ahead and get into some parting shots. Alex, this is what the people have come for. This is what they subscribe to. Alex, give us your parting shot.
Well, sometimes I don't really have one. Today I do. But, Jason, before I go, are you telling me that there are two princes possibly in this class?
Yeah, well, yeah, there's Prince and Prince Lee, and then there's another Prince next year in the next year's class that they're looking at too. So it's, that name's getting more and more common. So
must have been a popular name around the around the turn of the century. That's when Two Princes song came out from the
there you go. Two princes in this recruiting class possibly.
By far the most annoying song in all of history, by the way. If you ever go back and listen to it. Okay, so my parting shot, it has to do with the zoo. I went to the zoo last week for my, like, it was just a quick spring break trip that was easy for me and my family to a budget kind of spring break trip to get the kids out of here from Austin, a quick trip down to San Antonio. And I'll tell you this, man, it doesn't turn out to be that goddamn affordable a trip, for one. Getting into the zoo when I was little was like $5. Now it costs like $23 for every person. I even had to pay a little bit to you have to pay extra on every pass if you want to go on the carousel. You have to pay extra on every pass if you want to look at the butterflies. And, of course, my daughter wants to do all of this stuff, right? So by the time you're done with all that, you're like $75 in. I didn't have to pay anything for my son, thankfully, because he's still under, 18 months or whatever until they start trying to profit off of his little ass and won't even remember a thing. And then there's the food, where it's like, you have to wait in these, you have to wait for like so long among these just throngs of people to get these burgers and hot dogs and like crappy pizzas that are just so expensive and bad. And I understand, I mean, it's part of the, you know, business model. They have a captive audience there. You know, there's no way you can get around it. You know, if your kids get hungry, they need lunch, they need their $4 and $5 waters. I mean, even a water that's just out of the tap, where they just give you ice and water. I'm thinking this thing's free, but no, even that's $4. It's like as expensive as it, because they tell you it comes in a tiny little souvenir cup. So the thing that really bothered me is the parents. And I just want to ask you, what the hell is wrong with you, parents of America today? I am at the zoo, where you've paid money to come look at these animals. You have literally right in front of you, you got a brown bear, you have a tiger, you have a giraffe. I've never seen a fucking specimen like a giraffe. Have you seen one in real life? They're amazing. They're so big. They're like, they're the most ripped, beautiful animals that I've ever seen. You have a crocodile, you have a hippopotamus, you have a goddamn, snapping sea turtle. And all you want to do is let your kids play on their fucking iPhones. How can you are at the zoo. How is your kid looking around, fucking looking at his iPhone, and you're having to ask tell little Johnny, be like, hey, kid, look up from the iPhone. Look, there's spider monkeys up there licking each other's asses. Like, we're here seeing nature. It's like, you can watch that iPhone anytime that you want. Like, I understand that, like, my daughter, like, we even have it set up in my car to where going down to the zoo, she was able to watch a movie. Like, I get that. I totally understand it. Whenever you're sitting places, I've even gotten a little bit sort of, I'm starting to think about when my son's old enough to go hunting, whether I'm going to let him play video games or look, stream stuff on like my phone or something like that when we're sitting in a deer blind. Because when you're sitting in a deer blind, you're just there so long, you think maybe you could turn the kid off to being there if he's used to kind of being able to have those sorts of, luxuries of the kids just sort of have now, right? You might turn them off from hunting or, fish. I don't even know if I'm cool with it, right? But you think maybe I don't want to turn them off from hunting. I'm like, maybe let them watch this stuff until a deer comes up to this feeder. And then that's when the action really starts. And that way, maybe, get him hooked on hunting to where he'll want to continue coming as he gets older. Like, so I have a little bit of trouble with that. But what if you're at the goddamn zoo? Like, you're walking around looking at these wonderful animals. Your parents have paid, however much, $100 for the family to be there. They're going to drop another $50 off food. Who knows how much they spent on gas to get there and back. And they are letting their kids walk around looking at a goddamn iPhone. And I'll tell you the other thing. When I went and sat in this shitty restaurant that they had there, it's like every family with kids over, 5 years old. It's like the mom is sitting there playing on her phone. The dad is sitting there playing on their phone. The kid is sitting there playing on their phone. The goddamn family is not even talking to one another. They are just sitting there eating their food, stuck in their own world, watching their goddamn iPhones. And it's been a rule in my family since I ever had kids. I told my wife, we're not going to be one of these zombie fucking families. We're just not going to be. If we go out to dinner, no goddamn phones allowed. We're going to sit around each other. We're going to talk to each other like a family of human, rational people. And we're not going to, like, it's just, it makes me realize more and more. It's just such a bad look, too, when I'm here all day with my kid. Like, I've gotten to where I feel guilty just looking down at my phone, even checking my text messages or work shit or Slack that I need to check from work. Because it is such a bad look, dude, with these slumped-ass shoulders and these fucking fat sausage fingers typing on these crappy little keyboard pads. Like, what the fuck, man? What are we becoming? We're ruining our family units and we're ruining our trips and our good times that we're having together. We are at the zoo and we're supposed to be looking at the goddamn hippo and we are looking at Blippi on our fucking iPhones. There's my rant for this week.
Alex, when people go to your house, are they required to drop the cell phones in a dish at the door?
No, but here's the thing. If we're having a I'm nowhere near social enough to have people over to my house, Anwar. But if we did, I would expect the people, when you sit down to have a dinner or you're like, I'm not going to be somebody where if we're hanging out by the pool or in the backyard or, fucking, I don't know, kicking around, throwing the ball in the yard or something, and where people are outside having a barbecue, you can't look down at your phone. Or, like, of course, we all do. But if we're sitting down at a table and having dinner, what kind of respectful people are we? Like, I mean, is the company of each other not good enough anymore? Is going to the zoo where you're having to pay all this money to look at these animals that you'll never probably see again? Like, I mean, you can see a goddamn elephant. If you want to, there was one where you could reach out and touch his snout. There's like a little elephant snout kind of coming out of the gate at this kid, and he can't even see it because he's fucking watching Micro Machines on his iPhone. To me, it makes absolutely no sense, and I'm going to strive and do everything I can to raise my kids completely differently.
Dustin, as a person who does not have children yet, you are now inspired and know how to raise your children when you have them. So why don't you go ahead and try to follow that?
I cannot follow that.
I just have to be me every week and follow that.
I mean, that's yeah. We're going to have to, I feel your pain now. We're going to have to mix up these these parting shots for Rainer Moore. Alex, I think that honestly that might have been your best one. And I thought that the blue bonnet
it came
one
from the heart.
I thought the blue bonnet one was gonna be your top dog for a while, but no, man, you just surpassed it. And hey, my parting shot will be, Alex, I agree with you. We gotta get people off of their phones. You know, I got an Apple Watch for Christmas, and one of the best things it's done for me is that I'm not on my phone as much. I'm on my phone for work-related stuff. I'm on my phone for, you know, occasional texting. But since I get, you know, all the alerts I want on my watch, I don't have to look at my phone that much anymore. You know, you go look at your screen time on the iPhone, it tracks how much you're on your screen. Like, mine's gone down by hours because of this watch. So I'm with you, Alex. You know, there's so many things that we can, you know, see and take in at places like the zoo and on travel trips and all of these things, like, just get out of the iPhone. There's so much out there to see. Like, I even go places now sometimes where, you know, let's say a concert, for example, and you've got all these people that want to, you know, take pictures and video songs and all those things. And I get it. You know, when I went and saw Paul McCartney, I snapped a couple photos and some things and, you know, the fireworks at the end and that, whatever. But I'm almost like, you know what, I go out of my way to not video and take pictures just because it's like, I just want the mental image. I just want the memory in my head as opposed to just, you know, trying to figure out some way to fine tune it on my phone and do this and that and whatnot. So, Alex, I fully endorse your hatred and your message to the parents of America to get the heads out of the iPhones and look around for a change and see what's going on.
Jason?
Oh, man, I have not much other than to say I survived the camp circuit, which wrapped up last weekend with the Rivals camp in Dallas. And next up will be in June. I mean, there'll be a lot of things between now and June. But next big camp event will be in June, will be the Rivals 5-Star Challenge. We'll have things like 7-on-7 and different recruiting events and Texas camps and things of that nature, but not a lot on where, well, you know, we'll see. Official visits can start for recruiting starting in April. So those will be starting next weekend. Some guys have already began to set things up. Pretty quiet on the Texas front so far with official visits, but I expect recruiting after about a 1 week lull, I expect recruiting to really start picking up here for the home stretch, starting with, we talked about spring football game and then official visits. So buckle up, man. Enjoy what might be a moderately slow weekend of recruiting. Then things will pick up again next weekend.
Well, my parting shot is a slight rant. It will never be as good as Alex's rant, but it's a slight vent. I came home yesterday, was doing some things, and noticed my wife was in the closet, and I noticed she was upset and crying and in tears. And I said, well, you know, what's going on? And my wife owns a pet sitting company here in Austin. It's a five-star on Yelp. She's done great, had it for 10 years, and had one of these concierge companies that owns different apartments throughout the city of Austin approach her about doing pet sitting. And she's been doing a great job with that. And she had lost five buildings yesterday, not for her work or lack of work or anything employee-related, but simply because the apartment manager felt uncomfortable because she had a baby with her. Yes, our baby, our 9-month, who she takes out with her on these walks and straps to her body, much like the harness that you use, Alex, when you go and take your son, because she said they felt uncomfortable with a baby being around, they told her that she cannot do that. I don't want to wish any kind of ill on someone. I don't want to wish death, doom, or destruction, even though I probably would have in my earlier days, or at least if I had been drinking, but I'm not drinking at this moment. But all I will say is you got to be a pretty evil person to cause someone to lose work and lose income simply because you just don't like them having a child. I don't know where you are in life. Not a child that's screaming, not a child that's being disruptive, but you just don't like the sight of a woman working, holding a baby. To you, I would say, I sure hope no one does the same thing to you, even though secretly I kind of do. And on that note, I hope this podcast went well. You guys got to see me in a different environment. Usually you see me as your drunk uncle on the Yak, but make sure you tune into all those great podcasts. Alex has a fantastic podcast. I still think you should just do a podcast of rants and nothing else, because I would probably make sure I listen to that immediately if it was just Alex's rants. Jason does a fine job, does a great job giving you his recruiting information, you know, Catch, obviously Dustin. Make sure you get into the war room. I have a chock full of nuggets and information or breadcrumbs, whatever you guys prefer, because I know you guys don't like them to be nuggets sometimes. You get a little picky. Hope you didn't mind me filling in. But for Jason and Dustin and Catch and Alex and everyone else, you guys have a fantastic week. Thank you for listening to the Ticket City podcast, and we shall talk soon.